I was talking to Carol today, and we were talking about the summits that Carol's been doing, these health summits. Somebody can organize a lot of speakers, and they go for a couple of days and record it all, and then that's there as a big collection of information. Maybe they sell it at some point later. But Carol has done many of these over the past couple of years, and she says every one of them is started by somebody, usually a woman, but not necessarily, who was ill and eventually got better and then was inspired to spread the word on what they thought solved their health problem. And they moved into organizing summits. So I said, this is a major syndrome of our time. Back in the 1949, I think, is when Arthur Miller did the play Death of a Salesman. And 15 or less years later, McLuhan said, once you got into the satellite and TV era, the beginning of the computer era, it was no longer death of a salesman. It was birth of a PR man. That was the new middle-class stereotype for business activities, for business role-playing. And so in Death of a Salesman,
what's the difference?
Yeah.
A PR man is a salesman, no? Okay.
Yeah. The Death of a Salesman is the pre-World War II situation where a man was on his own. He didn't have much of a welfare state to support him, and he had to go out and make his own living, raise a family, and sell stuff, sell hardware, sell vacuum cleaners was the cliché. And it would lead to a lot of stresses and strains and hypocrisy and bourgeois conditions. And being a salesman was a hard life, but it usually was the way America grew. Then when you get into the information world after World War II, you have many of these big corporations. They're not innovating that much. They're just maintaining the environments their products created. So you had the new pressure for corporations to create an image for themselves in the TV landscape and to maintain a, sort of a role of public service, or that their environment, like General Motors, they would say, okay, you're buying our cars, and our cars are wonderful and they're necessary, and we are we have many different departments that respond to media questions about us. So the PR man was the guy who gave press conferences, so to speak, defending the image of the corporation, which had become successful and created an environment, as opposed to the individualist salesman out there trying to create an environment by selling their products and having more and more people buy them. At a certain point, when everybody's bought the vacuum cleaner, then that becomes an environment and a cliche in suburbia. So what McLuhan was saying is the PR man was the beginning of an emphasis on the public image of the corporation, and also for government. So McLuhan wrote that before World War II, Big Brother, that Orwellian apparatus that people were worried about, walked around externally, you could say, in the Outer Kingdom. The Nazis, the communists, they took over the streets, they set up a totalitarian state, and then they attacked other entities. That is Big Brother being visible. But when you moved into the information society and the programming of PR and public relation images and corporate icons, Big Brother went inside, McLuhan said. They went invisible. They managed and kept certain information out of the media and certain attitudes in it. So you have the Dulles brothers, you know, manufactured the Cold War in the early 50s. That would be an example of Big Brother not running around intimidating you and raiding your family and taking the Jews off to concentration camps. It was a form of information imperialism, you could call the new role of Big Brother. And then by the 60s, a lot of TV shows started to point this out. They had shows like Spy. Mad Magazine had Spy versus Spy. You had Mission Impossible. You had a few movies, the Bond movies. Remember, James Bond was always stopping some crisis that the public didn't even know about. some hijacker, some Rumpelstiltskin like a Dr. No would take over, would have some new technology that allow him to paralyze the Allied powers, the Pentagon, and then he could dictate the new conditions. So that would be a battle for power to get access to television to be the new PR image. That was what McLuhan called going inside. So you see the difference? Hardware man is a salesman. The software person is an iconic PR man. Okay, so that's back in the 60s. I would say today, and I would add to the birth of PR man, McLuhan was exposing the birth of the PR man hypocrisy, the information society and its iconography and what they left out, what they wouldn't admit. And McLuhan basically would say, well, they're not discussing the effects of these new environments and the disservices and this and that. So McLuhan created a new form of a novel, a new form of a play, to redo and update Arthur Miller's Death of a Salesman. So McLuhan was exposing and satirizing Birth of a PR Man. Well, what you have today is an environment of what I call information capitalism, where we're back to the salesman again, but the salesman is not selling hardware. The salesman or saleswoman is selling an image of themselves, usually on a spiritual scale, and they are advertising themselves as offering advice or life coaching for different identity crises and different problems that the average five-bodied citizen has. So information capitalism, we could say, rebirth of the life coach. So for many people, they don't want to have a regular 9-to-5 job, either the old kind of office or some kind of assembly line or working in a McDonald's. That usually leads to illness. And many of these people who were running these health summits had gotten sick because they had a job, not even a role, they had a job in some some aspect of post-industrial society where the stress was incredible. Just for a mother trying to raise a kid and have a career and do this and that, and especially if they're single. But most people, the tension in the 70s and 80s was you would have a job and money was time, so you'd have to use up your time to make the money to survive, pay your rent and that, and you would be missing what was going on in the information society, what I would call the TV landscape at the time, and then later the chip landscape, and then they shrunk and became bodies. So the pressure of having 4 and 5 bodies, the chemical body could not bear up under that stress. And so most people got chronic fatigue, hypoglycemia, yeast overgrowth, heart pains, lung disease, all kinds of problems. And if they're lucky, they got out of it. And part of getting out of it was they could solve their disease if they found a role, a way of making money in the information society where they would have the autonomy to work in their own pace at their own time and when they had the energy for it and not be subject to the grind of commuting and going to a 9-to-5 job. So that became the new dream is to become, quote, a guru, unquote, someone who had an insight, an epiphany, and then put out your shingle and offer advice or offer therapy. So in the 80s, 90s, before the Internet, many people became masseuses, they became Reiki healers, they became, the whole panoply was called New Age careers. They became chiropractors, acupuncturists, and therapists. Now, usually people in these jobs, they would not make that much money. They'd survive maybe, but at least they weren't in a grind, a 9-to-5 grind. And the... So I would say when McLuhan says we move from jobs to roles, that was the way people would find a role. They had to operate and offer information, and information can be a simple massage, a knowledge therapy, and that became a burgeoning growth industry in the 80s and 90s. Then once the Internet came in and people had a chip landscape, which is 1.0, and then 2.0 is a chip body, they moved into creating ways of of applying their services through the chip body, through websites, or offering some kind of wisdom. You probably even have consultants. You would know this, Madeline. People who advise people on where to go to take their ayahuasca trip in Peru. Who's an expert for finding out where I go to get my ayahuasca experience? So a lot of people have made a lot of different kinds of improvised therapy for pattern recognition in maybe even overcoming chronic fatigue or overcoming magnesium deficiency. I know that's what happened in the magnesium advocacy group. The main guy there, I think he got helped in his health situation with magnesium. Then he offered this Facebook group page where people could get together. And then he offers hair testing, hair analysis as his particular gig to get money with, besides whatever other advice he gives. And I see Chad showed up, so I would tell you, Chad, to re-listen to this. When you get a point, this is from... say, quarter after three, we played a recording for the first 10 or 12 minutes. You might be interested in this pattern I'm laying out, but we're in the middle of it right now. So the so this birth of a life coach phenomenon is what a lot of people see as a way of having a role. It also spills over into being an extra. I saw this in the bigger cities on movies, and then getting a gig as an actor. A lot of people want to get in the media and in entertainment. They think that's a slack-filled role, but they'll find it's quite a grind. And so we come along, and we, Aindam, can be seen as just another life coach, just another therapy. But what Carolyn does is she doesn't allow our stuff to be wholesaled, our products. So that cuts off a lot of therapists taking advantage of our products and making profit on them. And we've done other strategies or tactics. So the issue is that we stand out in the world of information capitalism because we don't depend on anybody, and we're not relying on anything other than word of mouth and whatever else through these radio shows and exposure people pick up that get into our stuff. But you'll find that in the information capitalism role, that is the only role that people can experience today in the North American society, maybe even in Europe, that offers some kind of charm or autonomy, which is what people more and more experience when they have five bodies. They have to have autonomy because they haven't got time to spend 9 hours, 8 hour a day shifts in their chemical body world. And so, let's see. So you have people listening to us and listening to other people. Everybody's looking for a way to make money out of offering advice. And it tends to be a therapeutic kind of advice. This is the new hypocrisy. If one does not talk about what I'm saying today, the reasons why information capitalism is the only choice for the post-middle class in a post-information environment, because as McLuhan said, when something's obsolete and doesn't make and mold consciousness anymore, social consciousness or the world of mortar, then it spreads like wildfire. It's what doesn't affect people is what spreads. And so you have more, in the last 80 years, you had more papers, more bureaucracy, more paperwork, more reading, more books, more magazines than ever before, because reading and visual materials didn't influence society. The electronic world did. So today you have a world where the Android meme is extending information for itself, not for the chemical body, and is speaking only to itself. So that means the normal distribution of information through chemical bodies is obsolete. So that's why you have more and more chemical bodies trying to get into the information society, because it's harmless. and does not affect society. Now, we say that ION is a new environment, and that's what's altering reality here at this point in the social motor level and the personal level. So we're the new environment, and that makes all the previous information forms obsolete and proliferate. And that is why you will not get the David Wilcoxes, the Alan Steinfelds, and all the gurus, and all the people who Deepak Chopra, and all these people who ride on the information capitalism level with some kind of success. What's that guy? David Icke is another one, and then there's everybody else. There's millions of them. They cannot adopt the Iondom perspective because it includes what I'm talking about and exposes the hypocrisy of information capitalism. Information capitalism is hypocritical because people are not told the whole situation. They're told some information pattern that makes them feel better for a while, but they're not told how that's going to make them. That pattern will not have any staying power. And you see Madeline was inspired by Iondom, and then after a while the information didn't seem to have any holding staying power. The pattern we offered, and she went through changes for that, and then she's still going through that. But ION keeps changing and altering itself and bringing in new environments. So if you find that it, what you thought ION was saying doesn't hold, if you stick around, you'll find that, well, what you thought ION was saying wasn't what ION is saying. And ION is not saying anything in particular. ION is just making itself be constitutive. That means forming the environment. The post-information capitalism environment. So that's why we don't have millions of people listening to us. Anybody who's got a gig going about this or that therapy or information pattern cannot adopt what we're doing because we are better than anybody. Our products are better and our range of influencers is better. So that obsolesces their role. And so we have an increasing fragmentation in the information capitalist world, all under slogans like you find your divine harmony, find a way to make the world better, how to make the world more peaceful, how to make it unified, how to bring people together. You can't do that under information capitalism. So if you actually wanted to make the world more united than it is today, you would have to turn off the Internet. Get everybody back in the assembly and working in car plants and making older technologies. This romantic image that people have of the 50s, 60s, it was relatively simple and unified compared to the fragmentation today. Now, Ian says, this fragmentation is going to get worse and worse and worse and worse, and you're not going to be able to survive it unless you take our projects and our products. So this is what came to me as I was thinking about part of the health process, why people get sick, they can't handle the pressure of having five bodies, they can't stay in the chemical body world as a majority part of their daily activity, they've got to slip into the chip body and TV body, information capitalist world, and they will not get physically better in their chemical body until they figure that out and find a role that gives them slack where they can get a bit of information. And actually be a creator of information, a prosumer. You produce patterns that people buy. And you can even extend that to the White House. The White House always has to keep changing its image and responding to the endless pattern changes to make itself look relevant. So I lay this out as the this is the deepest way you can understand the world of mortar today. And mortar has come alive and taken on a life of its own. And your private awareness that we talk about, the private citadel of consciousness that word power is part of, is embedded inside that. And you need to begin to see and tease apart what I'm talking about to become aware, to become what they are, all the information capitalists are offering, slack and some kind of poise in the endless pressures of pattern recognition. So that's my opening statement, and I welcome any input, especially from Chad, since he might be the most comprehending of what I'm saying, having heard variations of this for decades. You have anything to say about this, Chad, that might prompt me to say more?
I think it was great. I really agree with what you said about how the other like gurus and self-help experts. They put out stuff that doesn't really affect people, and people, and then it goes big. It seems like the less something actually affects people in their lives, the bigger it gets. It's like people only want the fantasy veneer layer that they can toy with, the chip body, and talk about, but they don't want the people seem to be afraid of any kind of like real chemical body effects.
Yes. Yep. And so, and this is what Ion always told us. If you want to be on the leading edge, you can't have mass appeal. You can't. If you do, you'll end up like the Abrahams going on Oprah's radio show, and they couldn't even open the phones to have people spontaneously ask the Abrahams questions. Oprah wouldn't have that, whoever managed the show. I don't know if it was Oprah personally. It might have been her. They did not want a free-range anarchistic environment where anything could be talked about. And that's when you get a certain level of success. You start to move into this control where it's almost like the birth of a life coach, is birth of a tetrad manager, where the Ellen DeGeneres and the Obamas and the Oprah Winfreys have such a big public empathy for their image, a huge crowd identifying with it, that they cannot upset it. And you see a lot of TV shows show the line that goes on behind the scenes. You see that in the great TV show Veep about the American vice president, who is now president in the sitcom. You have to be politically correct. You have to be spiritually correct. You have all these mass archetypes you must adapt to. And you can't be an eccentric idiot spouting off like that guy, Charles, what was that guy's name about 4 years ago? He's the son of a famous Martin somebody, and then he was the son. Charlie somebody? Remember he tried to go rogue, the Hollywood star? Okay, so who played the
Charlie
president
Sheen.
In...
Sheen.
Yeah, Charlie Sheen. Sheen. Yeah, he tried to... Here he was. He had an iconic role in whatever that show was called. That comes with responsibilities. You actually have to be a community citizen almost. You have to accept awards from the local Beverly Hills institutions. You got to donate some of your income. You got to go to the presidential dinners, the reporter dinners, all this TV landscape awards dinner level. And you can't be an eccentric. And he tried to become an eccentric, you know, partly inspired by Web 2.0, and he didn't know how to do it. But that's a good example. When you get a certain level of success, you are no longer your personality that you thought you had when you had a chemical body. And I think what I like about our situation is that we can be as crude and funny and absurd and outrageous as long as we have no sense of responsibility for our audience. We're not here to help you. We're not here. We can even say we're not even here to save you. We're not even here to make you feel good, which we went through last week with Katie. That allows incredible new forms of rapid pattern recognition with that freedom. So, yes, the bigger you become, you have to merge within the cultural archetypes. If you're a writer, an author, and you get a book out, you've got to go on an author's tour, book tour. You go around and make platitudes and talk about your book and sign autographs. If you're trying to be in any environment with your book, it's not going to work. You have to become part of the machine. So not even being – this is where Thomas Pynchon is pretty cool. Because he established his anonymity and he would not give in on that from the beginning, he doesn't have to go around and do a book tour and talk to a stupid audience. Because a lot of creators don't have any respect for their audience because the audience is not creative. And you're just making a buck by making a neat movie, a neat TV show, a neat this, a new nice talk shows. So you have a role in the information life coaching, but you have to rely on people not understanding what's going on. That's what your audience is. Your audience is necessarily unaware, necessarily greedy for being stimulated because they feel less than for all kinds of reasons. So this is what Coker talks about, the huge cynicism behind the scenes of the celebrity level. Anybody have anything to say to that? I mean, maybe we can go back to Chad. I'm sure Chad has something else. But, to say, but Madeline or Sean in London. You have your hand up, Sean. Makes... Does that mean you want...
Oh.
Go ahead, Madeline.
Well, that all makes sense. What I'm wondering, though, is what about... There are no other roles other than having some sort of advice to offer.
Do you know of any? Let's see.
No.
What you could do.
No.
There are roles.
Well, I'm trying to.
You have a role.
Yeah, go ahead.
You work in the Information Society. You work for whatever that is you do, but you work behind the scenes as part of the prop builders and environment builders. You're not, and that can be a stress, but maybe you have pretty good hours. I don't know, maybe you have breaks.
Are you kidding? Show business hours are brutal.
Right, that's true. And you could say the TV landscape, I noticed that on movie sets. It's horrible being an actor on those sets. No time to do anything else. You got to spend so many hours preparing and dealing with, and it is the new slavery. The only perk is that if you're a star, you get maybe some good money, and that allows you to take time off, and then you have the freedom to pick your projects. But it is, I don't know if the young kids, the 10-year-olds who we're trying to reach, if they may be pretty savvy about not wanting to work for anybody else. Many bands the last 20 years say, well, we're going to be an independent band. We're not going to work for some record company. But it still ends up to be a pretty bad grind. You know, to try to pull that off. It's very hard to get the autonomy, even if you're a smart kid who sees through the compromises you've got to make and the pain you got to go through to have a regular role in the big information machines.
I just read an article saying about the generation that comes after the hipsters, the one that's starting now, and it's basically...
How old are they? Okay, Paul, Chad, well, how old are they? Are you talking about 15-year-olds or 10-year-olds?
Like 18 to 30.
Okay, that's the hipster is Generation X or Generation Y?
I guess millennials, kind of. I'm talking more culturally rather than age. So the cultural byproduct of the... Yeah, the cultural byproduct of the hipsters and the yuppies is, what are they calling them? Yuppies or something, and what they want is what?
You're not calling them yuppies.
No, not yuppies. Okay. Is a new term, totally new term.
What is it?
Yuppies. Yuppies. I'm learning something new here. I'm not talking about fucking yuppies or anything like that.
No. Could you spell the term again?
Okay.
Okay. There's a lot of noise. I'm going to mute Madeline. I'm assuming that noise is coming from Madeline. Okay. What is it, Chad, the spelling?
Y-U, C as in Charles, I-E-S, yuckies.
Wow. What does that mean?
They're the byproducts of the hipsters, hipster culture and the yuckies.
So what are they? What do they stand for? Why you don't see? Are they disgusted with everything? Are they saying yuck?
I don't know exactly. Okay, I only read one article on it. I don't know the whole background on it. All I know is they want to take their own fucking ideas and build those. They do not want to take someone else's idea and execute it. So in other words, they don't want to work for anyone else. They only want to have their own idea and then execute that.
Okay, my immediate pattern for that is the children of the life coaches, the ones who would put on some kind of therapy, and they're doing it so they can have their own money-making potential, information capitalists, and the younger kids who have parents doing that, they are sort of not even wanting to be therapists. They want to be creative. Is that what you're saying? They want to have create their own environment, like little Sarah's son Noah has his own YouTube radio show, right?
They want to take their own idea. They want to be original, so they want to have their own idea and execute that, whether it's building a business, starting some organization, creating
some kind of art of their own that they believe is original from their own head. So
right.
That means that they don't want to go out and work as like a set designer or go out and work as a psychiatrist or an accountant or go work for Google or anything like that. So if this cultural trend gets big enough, all the big corporations are going to have a really hard time hiring people because these people do not want to work for them. They want to have their own startup. They start it in their garage, and they go out and put their mark on the world through a business.
Right. Now, that's what... What? What does someone say?
Oh, that's me, Kate. I was just wondering, is all of that happening for these younger people because of the veil thinning and because there's just more, they're having more thoughts coming to them, more ideas that are being unveiled?
No, don't think of it as thoughts. It's the extreme autonomy that Web 2.0 references and the phrase American Pharaoh. Every kid is a programmer. What McLuhan says in his Burroughs Review is Egyptian, like a pharaoh, programming the whole world as its content. That's what the Web 2.0 gave everybody, regardless of how old they were. So you've had that for 10 years. So you've got these kids growing up with that stereotype, with that given. Hey, I'm only programming my dynasty. I'm not going to work for anybody else. It's extreme autonomy that the Web 2.0 created. And that's part of the information capitalism. They want to be they basically want to redo the effect of the satellite, which is do your own thing. But they don't want to do something. They want to harness media environments and even make new media environments. They've got all the media environments that have happened as their content. So I say that. What do you say, Kate, in response? What did you? Is that what you meant in relation to what I just said, or did I correct you?
No, that's different, I guess. I mean, I don't really understand fully what the thinning of the veil incorporates. If that has to do with the Web 2.0, are they related at all?
Oh, yeah. The veil is many meanings, but in the world of social mortar, it is you subject and less than an environment that you operate within. You're a slave to it. When the veil is gone, you are in charge of your environment. You're not responsible to anybody else, and you can do whatever you want. You don't even care if there's any other worlds. It's just your worlds. So that's what Ayn talks about taking in your and enhancing your God power. So that is losing the veil. Yeah, so these young kids don't operate with a veil, at least they imagined that they could live without a veil because they feel it in the way the Web 2.0 is.
Yeah, even though they don't know that there is a veil, they don't even know that a veil exists.
Right.
But the power that's being released during the thinning of the veil, they don't know, they can't recognize that power.
Their power by default. If someone turned off the iPhone and their computer apparatus, their chip body, they'd all go nuts. They'd kill themselves. So they became gods by default. It's almost the social mortar version of the guff emptying. And we have to remember the guff has been emptying for 150 years. And so you've got these young bodies living as gods by default because it was given to them. They don't know where it comes from. That's why this show is here. We're here to explain the autopsy on many levels and why you got reborn. Take that last scene in the May 31st Game of Thrones where the Ion figure kills everybody or creates an environment where everybody offs themselves and goes in the guff, and then the guff is emptied. It's perfectly acted out in that episode, and that's what we're doing, and that's what the digital environment did. It wiped out everybody and then retrieved them. So this is a trend that journalists, of course, the journalists are old forms of information capitalists. They sit around looking at the older media and looking for trends and patterns, and they work within cliches, that there is an audience and all, and that there's a magazine and that they have a role. So they've noticed this trend. This is a definite fact now. This is like post-Douglas Copeland, who named the Generation X. This is the new fact, right? Chad, that's what you're saying?
Right. And the reason why they're called yuckies, you know how yuppie was a young urban professional? Well, yuckies is young urban creatives.
Right. Now, I've heard the phrase creatives been around for about 10 years. Somebody wrote a book about 10 years ago saying that the cities that survived in the post-industrial societies were the ones with the creatives. And they tended to be, they included gays and eccentrics and, I don't know, hackers and drug dealers and everything. They were telling the city mayors to let these bizarre, apparently nonconformist trisexuals and transgendered people into your culture because they're very good at creating tourist or service industries or information capitalist kind of stuff. Now, you ever heard of that theory?
Detroit is really embracing that whole idea of allowing the creatives to rebuild their city. They have the world's biggest masquerade ball in Detroit at the old Masonic Temple. They have it every year. It wouldn't be allowed in a city like Vancouver. They wouldn't even allow this event. It's so debaucherous and everything, but Detroit allows it and embraces it.
And this is an example of Web 2.0 killed Jerry Falwell in The Moral Majority. And, you know, about 10 or 15 years ago, he announced that culture wars were over and that the moral majority and the Christians lost. You can't. The economy requires pagan diversity, and the Christian Puritanism can't survive under that level. And that's why that Christian reality is gone. It was a technological effect. And that's, again, here's this Christian morality that the moral majority had a lot of iconic power in the TV landscape for decades. They were unaware. No matter how Christian they were, they didn't understand what was going to do them in. If they were smart, they would have outlawed, you know, Web 2.0. And this is the naivety in all therapies and all forms of advice, is that nobody has the knowledge that comes from the vortices, Wyndham Lewis, Pound, and Joyce, then gets crystallized into McLuhan, and then gets enhanced by Croker, and then completed by me and Ion. This knowledge is the only knowledge that you have to master if you want to declare yourself an aware person or a spiritually evolved person. Because, as Ion says, the chip body has merged with the astral body. So you can't just use Buddhism. You can't just use, Allah or anything. You can't use psychology. You have to have awareness of environments altering you and becoming extensions of yourself and then consuming you. That's the required awareness. And you won't get that in any of the therapies. And that's why the therapies come and go. We're the only therapy that lasts. And you can't sell our therapy. Talking to somebody the other day, and they said, how come you're not like a Deepak Chopra and blah, blah, blah? And because he was impressed with what I was saying, and I said, well, you can't sell my stuff. My stuff goes too far into perceiving what the situation is, and it makes the very program that I'm on, like if I'm a guest on Charlie Rose, I'd make Charlie Rose obsolete if you actually were honest to the point of understanding what one's saying. Everybody's an information hypocrite. So we haven't come up with a good term here. Rebirth of the information hypocrite is what I'm talking about. No longer death of a salesman. Then it was birth of a PR man in the 60s. And then the plague of life coaching. And that includes all therapies that came before the term life coaching. And today we've got the birth of the, you know, what do you call it, the sidebar, because everybody is a sidebar at the end, considering the Ring of Fire and what's going to happen there. So the sidebar of information hypocrites, we'll call it.
Infocrits.
What?
Infocrits.
C-R-I-T-S? Oh, you mean
crat. The portmanteau of hypocrites and information.
Infocrits.
Information.
No, you know... that the infocrit implies criticism. Most life coaching is trying to give people a detached perspective where they feel detached and at tune with some divinity or something and secure. Many people interpret Iondom that way, that they get in touch with their non-physical and then feel cool and feel secure. And the drops actually make them feel that way. But their terms for an understanding defining it is not correct. So criticism is what is part of pattern recognition. Everybody wants to be a viable critic, and you'll see that everybody's cynical about everything else that's going on, but they have an information pattern that gives you detachment from the Android meme and maybe also makes you feel good. So I wouldn't say infocrits. It has to be hypocritical. This criticism part was something I was planning on saying, and I forgot that part, so now we got it. You brought that in. It's information, it's hypocrites. Now, yuckies, so they want to make their own scenes. How do they plan to go about doing this, Chad?
Okay, so in the last 10 years or so, a lot of these new enterprises have sprung up, and they're called startup accelerators. So there's a new ecosystem that involves venture capitalists, angel investors, seed investors, and any other big companies like Google or Yahoo that want to sponsor and throw money into the pot. And they'll have a building, so they have an office, and it's run by the venture capitalists, and then they bring in these individual yucky creatives, and the creatives might have an idea for a new type of drone software or something. And then they get, the creatives get lent money. You know, they'll get like hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions of dollars to work on their project and get it to the point where it can go to market and possibly raise more rounds of funding. So this is the new infrastructure, the jobs infrastructure. People are running away from that like lemmings. They don't want the long-term survivability of the economy rests in these small individual startups going through the startup accelerator ecosystem of venture capitalists rather than everyone dumping into a big corporation when they get out of school and working for the corporation. They'd rather take them out of school.
Here, let me comment. I get that. Let me comment on that. That begins in the 80s where people start saying, my chemical body cannot do the grind of 9 to 5 for a big corporation or a big service environment, a big medium. And it eventually, you know, it was causing problems, so people got sick. You will see those different diseases on my tiny note chart. I've got chronic fatigue, immune deficiency, yeast in there, I think, and lung disease, and heart disease. So as the Web 2.0 came in, that old figure of avoiding the 9-to-5 chemical body organization phenomenon, fitting into a big chart, is now, several generations later, considered a fucking plague. And the young kids know that. They run from that figure, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
And they don't even have to be told about it. Like the baby boomers, Generation X, they went in there, got it, happy to get a job, but then after a few years became very unhappy because of the stresses of it, and they were duped. They had to learn through experience. Sounds like the younger generations, they know that instinctively.
Yeah, I mean,
they're not going that way.
There's a new class system for those who are coming out of university where you have three classes. You have the ones that did exceptionally well in university and they're going to go on to graduate studies and they're going to stay and seek tenure.
Yeah.
Eventually, and they're going to stay in academia. The other ones are going to get out and be involved in a startup accelerator, start a company, become an entrepreneur. And if that fails or succeeds, either way, they go on to the next company and build another company. But keep building companies like Elon Musk does. And then the third class is like, these are the new poor. This is the people who didn't do too good in school and they don't have the balls to go out and start their own business. So, or their parents made them, they're Chinese and their parents made them go to university and they don't really understand what they're doing and they don't have any passion or any drive behind what they're doing. So they end up just working at a big telecom company, a bank, an insurance company. They go to...
They fall back into the big organization. They fall back into the big ancient. Yeah.
Exactly. So it's like they end up going to prison because they failed to look after their individual God autonomy.
Yes. And so the yuckies are the ones that are successful, or the all three classes, all three levels are within the syndrome of being a yucky.
They're all rubbing against that syndrome. They're all rubbing against that syndrome, but the ones that are the creatives that come out and start their own, that become entrepreneurs, the entrepreneurs that are the yuckies. The academic ones are
you know, they're leveraging their independent intellectual development, but they're not creative.
Right. They're propping up the traditional form of information capitalism. They're just being educational.
Yeah, exactly. So they're taking their quote-unquote creative abilities and they're putting it into that old institution that's already there that, you know, they don't have to go out and create their own new institution.
So is the point of the article to warn about something? Are too many kids falling for the yucky syndrome and ending up really frustrated with failed startups? What is the point of the article that you read?
The point of the article is basically, it sounds like this article is actually geared towards people who are potentially in the yucky category because it has a checklist. And it's like, if you're checking any of these boxes, you might be a yucky. And then it has a list of like 10 things. So the main target audience for this article is potentially yucky, but it's also for the interloper.
It's also for people who don't know that trend. And,
logical article.
Yeah, if they're feeling alienated in university and they don't know what they're doing, they haven't figured out, well, I've got to move towards this yucky level.
It's not saying you should move towards the yucky level either. It's just, it's a pretty unbiased anthropological snapshot of a new demographic. It's just laying out the characteristics of that.
Right, and usually what those kind of trend mongering or trend pattern recognition is usually for advertising agencies to make commercials geared to that. And I don't see many commercials, but the occasional one I see, the values of yuckiness seems to be in the commercials the last 5 years. You know what I mean? They say, okay, you buy this product and you'll be a god, you'll be autonomous, you'll be on your own, you'll have your own startup. You know, they seem to hoik up those values in the ads.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of banks are doing that too. Well, I noticed a lot of banks are always supporting even especially when Obama came into office, like supporting people to start their own small businesses, which I thought was kind of weird. But I noticed that at least in the last, 8 years, it's just pump the media as much as possible to inspire people to create their own business. You know, go pull out this loan, go pull out that too, to create their own little, whatever you want to call it, I guess you want to call it their own little autonomy, but their own little business is just like, I feel like this is a major trend for everyone to jump into. And even like
the
software.
Sounds like the government is doing the slower version of the yucky. They're getting the people in the ghettos and that to think this way, go back to school. Don't they make it easy to go back to school now? They pay for it or something?
Yeah, they really try their hardest to exploit colleges, you know, not even like to give free access to it, but go ahead.
Right. Now, on paper, that sounds pretty good, pretty postmodern, mm-hmm. pretty benevolent. Is it working, Chad? Is this are there all these startups happening?
Yeah, but it's becoming a very, very saturated space. The amount of venture capital available for them is becoming a more competitive race to get that venture capital. Like the amount of venture capital that's being floated is not enough to keep up with all the potential startups that are coming online, but it'll catch up eventually. It's just that one trend is exceeding another trend, and that the trend that's exceeding is the amount of people that are trying to start their own business and seek funding to keep it afloat.
Yes. So
or sell it off.
You know, this isn't a new model.
Is Susanna?
Yeah, Susanna.
Yeah, what did you say?
This isn't a new model. In the early 98, 99, 2000, there was a huge amount of what they call incubators that were funded either by very wealthy people or venture capitalists that were incubating new startups, mostly in the dot-com community. But the goal there was to launch new dot-com businesses and then have them go public or flip them for a lot of money. And
I'm familiar with that.
Before the boom.
Yeah, that's the late 90s, and that's probably where the idea of the creatives came from that period, or just after it. Yes, so that was the beginning of this information capitalism, or the pharaonic. You become the American Pharaoh. And I don't know if I will be able to answer, but I'd say, you know, did this force win, American Pharaoh, because it's the term that describes the people the best, where the economy is, what the actual, yucky syndrome is. It's been building for 15 years, and that was the beginning of it. And then it had the rupture where they didn't have the venture capital money for a while, right? But then YouTube came in, and MySpace, and people started making their own spaces more and more, and not relying on the big corporations. Now, with a bit of the recovery, so-called recovery, the big corporations are got their money to help people again. But it seems that
the startup situation is more diverse, and it's not centralized in the .com or the digital or the web or the internet sector. Is that what the article says? I came in halfway.
Yeah, the article doesn't really go into that too much, other than saying there's a couple of other sort of paths that you have. One of them is to become like a social media consultant on your own. So it's not just tech startups. It is more diversifying. Like the incubator that I'm involved with, they have...
It includes the information capitalism or the pattern recognition or the being an audience for people who are starting out and not sure what to do. If you have some expertise and you did it before them, then you have a little charisma and you can pretend to advise them on what they're doing.
Exactly.
And it does seem that there's a huge disillusionment with corporate America, corporate companies, not just in America but globally. And in my experience, I'm finding that in the corporate communities, that the grunts that are working there and doing all the day to day are from India, are from Asia, are from China. There's nobody.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like mostly, you know, the Americans, the Europeans are fleeing as fast as they can from that environment.
Yeah. Yeah, the third world countries, former third world, are going through the 80s and 90s. They're not here in the United States. They're being the content of it. And the kids who grew up with that, with the present environment the last 10, 15 years, they don't have the sensibility of fitting into a big environment. And then you can see aberrations of it. Like, remember in Japan a couple years ago, there was this phenomenon of many late teens, early 20-year-old people who wouldn't leave their bedroom for 2 years, probably because they were just trying to stay in touch with their chip body. They wouldn't leave. They'd just stay home. And then you have in the collapsed Greek economy, I read this on the plane in Europe last summer, you have many young groupings or communes, which we discussed in one of the earlier What Youth Shows, the communal tendency, bartering tendency. You got many of these young kids providing alternative tourist adventures. They will not provide tours of the Acropolis or whatever the hell's over there that the normal tourist industries celebrate in Greek history. They are trying to improvise weird alternative tourism. And that again, that's their version of not going the stereotypical way. The stereotypical way cannot, of the Android meme, cannot last 2.0. That's why the economy collapsed in 2008 in the middle of 2.0. You cannot have a unified, two big to fail guys can't operate anymore. But they do fall back. See, that's the mood that Web 2.0 creates. Too big to fail, the too big to fail guys are vulnerable. They are actually failing, and you don't want to be part of that. But they represent older media environments that don't go away. The infrastructure doesn't go away. But the syndrome of yucky is a felt mood responding to the new environment, to the new figure of technology.
And to your earlier point, Bob, about advertising that you're seeing that is targeted to the young yucky, the strategy remains always targeting the younger segment of the emerging economy because the strategy is to develop behaviors and purchasing habits that will remain. But it's a doomed strategy because there's so much information out there that advertising is not the only conduit for information and establishing behavior. So they are thinking fast, the traditional marketing and advertising.
What you just said makes me say this, is that these venture cap, the bigger corporations like Google and that are handing out subsidies to people, grants to get things going, that's the only way they can appear useful. They have to create little mini civilizations, nano civilizations. They have to have a reason for having the medium of wealth and money. And they begin
to organize something. Here's how advertising is changing. It used to be big ad buyers, and they would buy ad space on behalf of a brand corporation. And now it's switching to influencers rather than ad space. So you just said, what did you call it, micro tribe or something like that, Bob?
Yeah, micro civilizations. Starting micro
civilizations. So now there's these micro civilizations that have their, like, each one of them has their own pope. So that pope would be the person that has 10 million followers on Twitter or 5 million followers on Instagram. And
right. There's
a new type of marketing company or advertising company called influencer marketing agency. And what they'll do is they'll connect a brand. The brand will say, okay, we want to get our product out there. And they'll connect the brand with an influencer. So they'll go find an influencer that has 10,000 followers. The brand will pay $10,000 to that influencer to talk about the product and wear it as if it's part of their daily life. Like the influencer will go on the YouTube video and go, oh, look, I just bought this new, you know, Nike jersey, and it looks so cool. Look at this. So I put it on in the morning, and I go jogging and everything. And then all
the
followers.
That would be the mini Pharaoh. That's it, like the Church of Genius, your temporary savior. Remember in Church of Genius, you have a temporary savior.
Short duration personal savior.
Right. And the influencer is a mini Pharaoh. He programs a whole environment for a while.
Yeah,
you're talking about a mini Pharaoh there. And so that go ahead.
I was just going to say that the whole concept of brand is actually evolving or disintegrating. I don't know. I mean, because before one would talk about touch points, to Chad's point about influencers, you have a message, you have a brand that stands for something singularly, and then you try to capture as many touch points as possible to capture different segments of society and people with different influencers, but now there are so many touch points and so many different segments that one brand has to be actually many different things to be able to reach the same amount of people. It's a very complex thing.
Yeah, Susanna, I just listening to what you're saying, this popularity of the singularity concept has been around for about 10 years. That's what a brand was. It was a Stephen Hawking singularity, and now the whole thing, that's all being blown apart in metaphysically or deeply by IOM, but on the Web 3.0 level, the singularity doesn't dominate anymore. The black hole doesn't have a dominance. That's what you're saying. There's too many black holes.
Exactly. Right.
Or maybe white holes. Maybe they're white holes that are happening. So it's always a welfare situation where the present leaders, just like, you know, the ancient Rockefeller people had to give out pennies, they had to start philanthropy. You always have to give your money back in this capitalist environment. And that's even a weak word, capitalism, but anyways, for speed of speech. You always have to give back to pretend that there's still something going on that you're part of. It's like Foucault says, the radicals of the 60s propped up the establishment, the CIA, the Pentagon, because they protested against the Pentagon, and therefore the Pentagon seemed to be a real institution because people objected to them. So they encouraged criticism of them. And that's the first thing I say to Paul Krasner in my Flipside dialogue with him in 94. I said, you did a good job working with Alan Dulles, you know, keeping a sense of social space going. And he thought I was nuts. He didn't think that he was propping the CIA up. He thought, being an old literate guy, that he was against the CIA. But you now have the, Chet, you're describing to me somehow the Android meme has to make itself viable by giving away its wealth and encouraging people to enter it. But it seems to be slightly past Android meme, where it's a God sensibility. I am the singularity, and I'm not moving. It's a variation of autism. I'm not, the only reason I'll acknowledge you, Mr. Google, is you give me a bunch of money to start a lab where I'm going to make a technology better than yours. That's the only way I'll cooperate with you.
Yeah.
It's something like that.
Yeah, it's accurate.
It's social anarchy. It's economic anarchy.
It's capitalistic chaos.
Yes. And, well, the chaos has been going on through most of the 20th century. So you had analog chaos, then chip body chaos. Now you've got ionic chaos. Because you could, just the content of the TV shows is ionic in their values. So I started two new shows last night. One's called Aquarius, which is about the Manson era. The X-File guy, David Duchovny, whatever his name is, he's a detective investigating the Manson family. And then the other one is this program called Sense 8. And 8 is attached to the word S-E-N-S-E. So it means S-E-N-S-E-A-T-E, Sense 8. But it's a number. And somebody was describing it to me the other day. It's people. You're going to find out that everybody has 8 selves. And I've just seen the first 2 episodes. But it unfolds where everybody has many selves. Definitely the JW idea, that there's 8 JWs, is right there, done by the Wachowski brothers, who did The Matrix. It's their first major TV show. Have you guys heard of this? Sense 8?
MJ told me about it on Saturday. I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, I think
it's
just came out this weekend. It's what?
Ed put it on Ion and Bob.
Yes, and it's a show where all the episodes are released. You know, the Netflix phenomenon, but I think it's either that or Aquarius is done by CBS. They've jumped on this Netflix thing of binge-watching. You know, you get 13 episodes released all in one day.
Mm-hmm.
That's what CBS did with this. I think they call it a series event. So you got more and more people, you know, at a crude level, more and more time in their hands, and so the gladiator circuses have upped the ante. They're having longer marathon gladiator experiences by watching these TV shows from, you know, all weekend.
More masturbation.
Well,
masturbation.
Isn't that an interesting concept that no longer do you have to wait for something to air on broadcast TV to watch a show, and you can binge watch, as you say, but isn't that a little bit of the undoing of time because we're not?
That's right, exactly.
We're not.
That's the way to say it's ionic. That's what I was looking for when I was saying there's an ionic aspect going on in the Android meme, and that's it. There's no time to have duration. You're not going to wait around. You got to get it all now.
You can watch it all at once, or you can watch it when you want. It's when you desire, almost. You know, at your bidding.
Yeah. Old Father Time, he's on welfare, and he's waiting for little handouts from Google, you know, to keep Old Father Time feeling useful, but very fragile. You know, and that would include any images of God, too. So you got these young kids.
And you can watch it without any advertising.
Yes,
that's
right.
You can watch all these shows without any advertising.
Yes, that's the end. Advertising, I write in Up There for Andy, is the social blood of community. And there's no social community possible anymore, so no advertising. You don't need that kind of blood to hold the body politic together. But the other thing is that the creatives have the confidence that they're going to make something and then get their $1 trillion or $1 billion within a couple of years, and then they'll have time to operate their five bodies with Slack. Time to do chemical tourism, time to do spiritual stuff with Ion and the astral body, time to make TV shows or watch TV, and time to do their chip body following, whatever you call creating followers is. What do you call that, creating followers? A prominent, like that's what a lot of the celebrities are. They have huge followers, right? That's what they do. They Twitter, and they enter the Twitter scape. So that's, so much, there's so much for the vanity of a person to engage today. You got five worlds you have to conquer. No wonder people are acting rather strange. And so the Wachowski brothers, one of them became a transgendered guy. He's like Lana or Lara. What would be a girl's name? Lara? Laura. It's something like Laura Wachowski. There's an awful lot of gay stuff going on in this sensate stuff. Now, here's my next point. The problem with the gay lobby, the problem with the hetero lobby, so the problem with the pagan lobby, that's the gay rights stuff, the problem with the Christian lobby, which is the Puritan visual space old faction, is that they are specialists. To specialize into being a Christian or a gay person or this or that is to emphasize the chemical body too much, and that's the hypocrisy of those movements. And because they're obsolete, they become the content of the Android meme and the leftover Android meme. They become the startling image for other dumb chemical bodies that never thought that that kind of stuff would be in their face. So you have to at least be trisexual. You have to be bisexual plus able to fuck machines, and maybe let's call it autosexual and metrosexual. You got to be five kinds of sexuality to be functioning today. And we demand rights. Us fucking five-body sexuality want to be recognized.
So let's not go with the gays.
Yeah, we will. We do not tolerate the gay fascists, the Christian fascists, the animal rights fascists. Anybody who specializes in some fucking natural phenomenon is an impediment to progress. And even children. We don't even want to hear from children. That's too specialized to claim you're a child or a youth. So so then I was developing this, and I said, why did Greece, the famous thing about Socrates' day is everybody was gay. Do you know about that? That the teachers, the information capitalists of the day, learning to write with the phonetic alphabet and with oral dialogue as the content, their students would become their lovers. That was a common thing in the rumors of this Greek culture. So my instant theory coming home from the beach today was, yeah, when visual space came in, the phonetic alphabet, it caused fragmentation, and people started to specialize in sexuality. So they went homosexual, because that was the novelty. You know, let's try homosexuality. And it only happened in Greece, because they were the ones who had the phonetic alphabet, you know, and a huge impact. And then over the next 1,000 years, the reason it fell back to patriarchy or to heterosexuality, still a specialist sexuality, is because the printing press favored the left hemisphere. The medieval period was pretty wild and not so specialized. But the left hemisphere took over, and so the heterosexual dominated. Then the electric age dispersed that, and then the counter-sexuality, the counter-specialists of being gay, the Oscar Wilde meme, took over. And now they are the establishment, and you have your obligatory specialist gay scene in any movie or sitcom or TV show. And I'm accusing these people of being specialists. They're as bad as the Christians. The
so
old form
Bob
of liberation.
Saying, so, Bob, what you're saying is that singularity in any form is obsolete. It's a multifaceted.
That's right. Godship is obsolete.
Or sensuality in all forms.
That's right. Godship is obsolete. To emphasize the monad, that you are God, is silly. And I'm explaining more and more why Ion has dropped what it said in the first couple of years. Emphasizing the non-physical is obsolete. Any category is obsolete. This would help you understand what Ian is trying to say today. Ian is actually trying to avoid specialization and therefore emphasizing silence a lot. Say a bunch of words, you'll create a specialist dupe of the sentence you just said. You getting this? This is where Finnegan's Wake is so appropriate. You can't even get a letter going in Finnegan's Wake. It doesn't allow any specialism. But because you're a trained reader, you will look for specialist aspects and themes in the book, but gradually you will become aware that, oh, none of that applies. James Joyce said through the Evergreens, I wanted to make sure that no one could find an underlying theme in the book. He knew that would be too specialist. So, how are we being imposed upon? What rights do we do? The five-body faction demands we're being imposed upon by the specialists of the bodies. There's those who specialize in the TV body, the chip body, or the astral body, or the chemical body. I suppose we monopolize the mystery body. We can be accused of being mystery body specialists, but we're ready to drop that any time. And Ayn's always emphasizing the merging of the five bodies and then moving to the hexad. So what are we? What rights are we demanding? Who's getting in our way? Anybody?
People that try to build patterns into mortar.
Yeah. Well, yes, that's true. Not build patterns, maintain them, and make money off them.
Okay. How about this? They keep, when the mortar gets smashed, they keep remaking. Like they keep taking the mold, pouring more mortar and trying to put the pattern back.
Yes. They don't give it up. Coker says all art today has to cancel itself. If they don't cancel themselves, then they are highly suspect and being propped up by Alex Jones and the CIA. They're CIA dupes.
So cliche archetypes are obstacles.
Well, that's a good one, Susanna. Yeah, very good. You're saying the cliche archetype pattern is an obstacle. Correct. Now, that's pretty clever, Chad. You got to hand it to Susanna. She's doing some kind of fucking homework to come up with that one.